Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is Top Story with Evans Mensah.
Tonight, a coalition of civil society organizations have joined forces to demand full disclosure on SNIT's controversial sale of 60% stake in four top hotels to Rock City Hotel, owned by their Greek minister. That organizations, including the Center for Democratic Development, CDD, are questioning the source of the minister's funds. More on that shortly. But first, the Trade Union Congress and organized labor are themselves tonight under intense scrutiny for failing to mount a more aggressive resistance of the transaction when it was first considered and a decision was taken by the SNIT board nearly 2 years ago. Now, listen to Dr. Daniel Seto, who has been criticizing representatives of organized labor who sit on the SNIT board.
You need to understand what happens in the boardroom. If you don't have the energy for the boardroom, you go and everything they say, you support it. You raise your hand to vote in support of it. That is why I'm saying, even as we pick people to serve on boards, let's pick people who have the time and then the capacity to read board documents, do their own research, and be able to make the relevant contribution in the boardroom.
Okay.
Now, if the effectiveness of the board is what we are seeing in this sale and other things we are discussing, what is leaking out is a reflection that, look, it's not going well in the boardroom. I represent a certain constituency and I do not support the transaction in the boardroom, I should go back to my constituents and say, this is what happened. So you mobilize support from them. But it's quite strange that we have four people representing workers, but they couldn't stop it. Whatever might have happened in the boardroom, they couldn't stop it. It's out there. The people they are representing says, we don't want this transaction. That doesn't speak well of us in terms of governance. I mean, people must stand for values and what they believe in. And in that boardroom, even state their position.
And that is a criticism of organized labor led by the TUC. Well, we are hearing from the TUC themselves on this particular matter. Listening to Dr. Kwabena Nyako-Otu, is the Director of Research and Policy at the TUC, who was on PM Express yesterday. And I began to ask him by asking him, why did it take them so long, 2 years almost, to hold a press conference on the subject after Samuel Kituta Blackwell, a politician in Parliament, filed the petition?
Better late than never. Whatever be the case, we have a battle on our hands to fight. But remember that if we are talking about investment decisions, not all of which we at some point would like to make public. So we have our processes of advocacy and lobbying that we do behind the scenes to correct some of the things that are not right in our view.
So why did you then decide to hold a press conference now to tell us about it and to say you're resisting it? You could have done it 2 years ago.
It's true, but I've also pointed out the fact that these are investment decisions. And sometimes you actually do not want to jeopardize SNIT and its decisions.
So what changed yesterday?
So what changed actually is that we now realize that the whole process has been fast-tracked to some extent by SNIT and the people behind the scenes doing the deal.
Is that actually factual? Because if you go by the SNIT and you haven't disputed the SNIT timeline, that Brian Champon conversation, at least it's been more than a year that Brian Champon's Rock City was selected. So where's the fact tracking?
We hold a number of things, information, and sometimes it's not everything that we want to put out. You understand? There are things we know that we are working in the interest of Ghanaian workers. We have called for a meeting with the president on some of these issues. What's the point in putting out those issues even before we meet with the president? But of course, once the issue is in the public domain by the Honorable Samuel Okudzeto, an important issue of that nature, we cannot also keep quiet on it. It's already out there in the public domain.
So if Samuel Okudzeto Ablakwa had not put it, in the public domain, we would not have TUC hold the press conference on this.
Of course, you would have still pressed ahead with our meeting with the president. And from whatever comes out of that meeting, we surely would have informed the people of Ghana.
It took a member of parliament before you hold the press conference. And I must put to you, that is failing in your duty to protect the workers in a very timely manner to prevent something like that from happening.
Not necessarily. You see, there are a lot of things that TUC does behind the scenes, and not everything that we put into the public domain. We commend the Honorable for bringing the issue to the limelight, but it does not necessarily mean that the TUC was not doing anything about it. I have told you that we have information to what was happening, not just this one. There are many other things happening to SNIT or happening with SNIT workers' money. But we thought that we needed a meeting at the highest level to be able to address some of the issues.
But that meeting took 2 years, and you were happy waiting.
I'm telling you that just on May 1st, we asked for that meeting.
Why didn't you ask that meeting last year when you saw Brent Champon's company as a winner of the bid?
Okay, so you know that we have had several meetings with the presidents. You don't know all the issues that we have raised.
I'm asking now, did you raise that in that meeting you had last year with the president?
A lot of issues.
Specifically, did you raise the Brian Champon Rock City sale of 60% stake with the president last year?
Not necessarily. We didn't raise that issue.
But that is an indictment on organized labor, TUC. It is an indictment, isn't it?
We have a flow of information, you understand? So for all you know, when we met with the president last year, we didn't have the details of this Rock City thing.
But you did, because you have four members on the board who took the decision. We don't even know if they voted on this matter, but four members, including the reps of the Pensions Association on there, who knew that the decision had been taken. So you had all the information. If Samuel Okudzeto Ablakwa could get this information, definitely those four members should have it too.
There are many things we know about SNIT and state institutions, you understand? Mm-hmm. We have our own level with which we address some of these issues.
Well, today, a coalition of civil society organizations have been addressing a news conference on a host of issues that they deem very important that needs addressing. One of them, obviously, is this raging controversy about SNIT's decision to sell off 60% stake in four top hotels, including the Labadi Beach Hotel, to Rock City Hotel, which is owned by their Greek minister. Now, addressing the news conference, Dr. Kojo Asante, who is a director of advocacy and policy engagement at the Center for Democratic Development, questioned the source of the funds that the minister is using to purchase these hotels, but also demanded for full disclosure.
Further exacerbating our concerns are revelations that SNIT and the Rock City Hotel, owned by the current Minister of Agriculture, I engaged in negotiations to purchase four hotels, including the Labadi Beach Hotel, one of Ghana's most esteemed and profitable hotels in Ghana. One may ask, what is the public interest justification for a decision like that? And where is the minister raising the resources to acquire these assets? We welcome actions taken by Mr. Okudzeto Ablakwa, MP for Southampton, in his petition to Shiraj as it signals an important step towards addressing these issues. We also welcome the intervention of organized labor, 2UC and CrossAct, as owners of the pension funds. Indeed, everyone who pays SNIT contribution should have an interest in this matter. These developments raise serious concerns about our fight against corruption and the prospects for accountable government, and whether or not, indeed, we are likely to recover from our current situation.
And that there's Dr. Kojo Asante, is the Director of Advocacy and Policy Engagement at the CDD. He joins me right now on the phone. But also joining me right now is Ernest Thompson. He's a former Director General at SNIT. And it's to him I go next, because Mr. Thompson, thanks for the time here on Top Story. And you were there, I believe, up until 2016 before you left that office. What do you know about these four hotels in terms of its performance? Of course, included in that is that Crown and the Jewel. We're talking about the Labadi Beach Hotel. What can you tell us about it in terms of what you know?
Good evening, Evans, and a very good evening to your listeners and your viewers. Let me start by making this point. In my 35 years of working with SNIT, until I got to the Director General position, I've had a singular honor of being seconded by SNIT to run GBH as the Chief Executive for 3 good years before coming back to SNIT and being appointed the Director General. I've also therefore served on the board of GBH. And when I say GBH, we mean La Palme, Bourgeois, and Elimina, because it's a group. And also, I've had a chance to serve on the board of Labadi Beach. And I've been involved in all the struggles which took place so far as these two hotels are concerned, that's the GBH group and the Labadi Beach Hotel. And I've been involved in all the agreements. In fact, I led the legal team in a lot of what happened during those days. Now, let me make a point clear. I think that at this stage, it might be necessary for the SNIT board to just stop the transactions.
Why?
Because, one, the procedure they've used is not the best. You see, SNIT is a pension fund, and it's a long-term investor. It is not a bank holding deposit. So SNIT investments are analyzed from various perspectives. You just therefore don't exit from SNIT investments that way. Number two, for investments like the hotel and the road they played in this country, if you want to exit from them, you have to do a lot of background work. And that means that you need to have the experience on how to handle it. I was surprised that from 2018, a process of this nature started without engaging the TUC.
But they have four members on the board.
Yes,
isn't that
you
indirect
have to be
engagement?
Very careful. That's where the experience comes in. The board is a board, but there are key stakeholders you have to talk to. And I'll give you a practical example of that. When we wanted to sell the shares in Merchant Bank to Fortis, we had to meet the TUC at the Labour Hall to explain everything to them. The meeting was arranged by the then General Secretary of the TUC, and I had to lead a team to explain things to them, and they took us through a lot of questioning. You don't limit yourself to the board members.
But the board had a responsibility to do. I'm talking about
yes,
the four board members.
Evans,
to go back
let me
to,
tell you, Evans,
to the,
let
to
me
the
tell
members
you what.
And tell them what's happening.
There are times we try to be very academic. and say that there's a board, the board will do this, the board will do that. Right? But there's a practical way of handling sensitive issues of this nature. Even in the case of Merchant Bank, we had to meet then the NDC parliamentarians. And we even had to meet some NPC parliamentarians to explain things to them. Because SNIT is very sensitive. And you need to know how to go about these things practically. This comes from practical experience. You don't learn these things in textbooks. And that's one mistake the board has made.
And I need to ask you your view on the four hotels now being sold off, 60% shares. You obviously, from what you said, played a central role in sitting in the contracting and, of course, the negotiations around this in the past to make it work.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
I'm asking you about the four top hotels. SNIT's argument is that they need to sell this off so that they can, for profitability, for efficiency, etc. Do you agree with the justification? The impression is created that these four hotels need help and SNIT needs to divest of its interest, at least 60% of that, so it can bring them back to profitability.
Ivan, let me give SNIT the benefit of the doubt, because they are the directors, and let's even accept that what they are saying is the truth. I don't have any reason to doubt it. But if that is the case, the procedure being used is wrong. You don't use a share sale and purchase agreement to do that. You have to use a subscription agreement, and the hotels will benefit.
What does that mean?
Okay, let me explain that in finance law to you. And that is what we did in the case of Merchant Bank, in the case of Simnet, and even maybe Vanis. Now, the way it works is this. You have 100% shares. In the company, the names you are mentioning are just the names of the hotel. The shares are held in the company. So for Labadi Beach, the name of the company is Hotel Investments Ghana Limited. We call it HIG. And then for La Palme Bourgeois and Elimina, the name of the company registered at Registrar General is DBH. It is at that level that SNIT holds the shares. Now, in the subscription agreement approach, the company will issue new shares. And anybody who wants to come in will come and buy it.
In other words, I can also go and buy
it. You can go and buy it. But the key thing is that the money goes straight to the company, to the hotel. What they are doing, if you use the share sale and purchase approach, the money goes to SNIT. And if it goes to SNIT, what is going to happen? SNIT is now going to take the money back and give it back to the hotel. You've not done anything. Something is wrong somewhere.
Stay with me, Ernest Thompson. You raised some very fundamental points and suggested an alternative to what is happening. I want to bring in Dr. Asante now, Kojo Asante, Director of Advocacy and Policy Engagement. You heard him earlier, part of the Civil Society Coalition, speaking on this, but also other issues. Dr. Asante, you at the press conference asked a question, and you posed the question, where is the minister raising the resources to acquire these assets? Why is that question important?
It's important just because the person is a public officer that is interested in transacting with the state. And once the potential of conflict of interest is raised, once issues of whether the minister's means and assets, above board is established, then, we can all trust that whatever this process that the minister has gone through It is fair to everybody. It is credible, and therefore, whatever the outcome is, we can all accept it. And I think it's just because the person happens to be in a clear position of interest. The question is, how have they cured that process to make sure that the transaction is above board?
What about SNIT itself? Considering that they are acting on our behalf, and I say I'm talking about yourself and mine and everybody else listening to us right now, we focus quite a bit on what is happening. And Brian Champon, obviously, because he's a minister, he's a politician. But SNIT itself at this moment, what should be happening to SNIT in terms of this particular matter, beyond, of course, what Strad may decide to do?
Yes, I think it's one of the questions for me that I think it's very important for us to pursue, which is really the decision to sell these four hotels and how these, they came by this decision. What really is the business sense in pursuing, the decision to divest 60% of the initially six hotels, now the four hotels? How is that done? Because it looks like we always just come to the point that, well, somebody has exercised a discretion, and therefore we should then accept it as making sense or a credible decision. If SNIT is acting in our interest, there has to be a basis on which we can assess whether or not the decisions they are making is in our best interest. So that itself, for me, is a question that we have to understand. What are the analysis that they are basing their decision on in terms of profitability, in terms of ability to run the hotel or not run the hotel? So that's why I think the question around disclosure of the documents is not just about the procurement process, but the decision-making that led to the procurement process itself, I think, has to be interrogated. Because there's quite a lot of that across the public service. People make decisions and they then jump from there and say, well, then, is the transaction credible? But the decision itself, as we are beginning to find out, sometimes you ask yourself, really, is that true? That if you are making money from an existing business, why do you want to divest, take the money and do what? And invest it in this economy? What are you going to invest it in? So I'm interested, and there are a lot of technical people who can assess that valuation. And people have to remember that under Article 296 of the Constitution, public officers taking these discretionary decisions are under an obligation to be fair, candid, impartial, not arbitrary. There are many conditions to this, but of course we don't really pay attention to those things. So I think you're right. I'm interested in how SNIT came to this position in the first place. I'm actually shocked this has been going on for a couple of years, and we are only now finding out how does the contributors of SNIT also get to know about the big decision making and the use of the public funds.
And Dr. Santit, to that point. A lot has now been said tonight about the role that our representatives on there, I'm talking about organized labor, the role that they played on the board when this decision was taken by the board back in 2022. They have four, organized labor, have four reps on the board. In fact, if you need to be including in there, there's a separate rep for the Pensions Association also on there, right? That is clearly an area that also needs scrutiny.
Yes, and I'll be interested to know what is the reporting mechanism of the representatives. Even how are the representatives selected? Are they selected by the executives of the organized labor, or they are selected by the appointing authority to represent organized labor? I mean, I would want to understand that as well. But if they are selected by the executives of organized labor, there should be a reporting mechanism that allows the members to also know what's going on at the level of the board, but even for us SNIT contributors, how do we How do we get, you know, information? I know this was advertised and so on and so forth. Of course, but if you are not a keen observer of SNIT activities, you will probably not cross your mind that a big decision like that. You know, in this case, should members be notified, like, you know, with company shareholders, that something like this is being made? You know, so I think there's a lot to discuss about how SNIT exercises its discretion around investment funds, you know. But I think the beginning of this inquiry, it's important that we get more information about what has happened up to date.
And Sharj is obviously proceeding with his investigations. They've written to Kujita Blaka to say they will do so. But I need to ask you, will a corruption risk assessment, similar to what we saw the OSP and BACON with the JAPA deal, also help?
I think we are beyond the risk assessment because it is before Sharj. And they will definitely look at the apparent, you know, conflict of interest, because, you know, Article 284 is very clear that a public officer will not put themselves in a potential conflict of interest where they are likely to. Okay, so if that in this transaction is very clear, whether Mr. Brent Champong is a member of parliament, that will apply. There's also the issue of holding office or profit. Even as a leading member of the MPP, he's politically exposed. So in any kind of setting that you put him in, he would have fallen in the potential conflict of interest. The question is, how was that cured during the process of the transaction? That we have to understand. And that's what one of the things that Sharj is going to investigate, and of course, the procurement processes and all of those things. So I think that process is important. But the other things we have discussed is SNIT itself and its decision making around this. We need to get more information about how they came to that decision to make the transaction.
In the SNIT statement, they tell us that negotiations are continuing. Now this matter has gone to Sharj. What should the state agencies, Sharj, for example, do to that process now? Because that process is continuing. There's nothing stopping SNIT from proceeding as if it's business as usual whilst we wait for the outcome of the Sharj investigations. Can that process be halted?
Yeah, I think I agree with organized labor that process has to be halted. I mean, cannot, you know, given the grave issues that have been raised, it has to be halted.
Who must do that, though?
Whoever the appointing authority is to SNIT. If it's the president that is the authority, or the minister that's supposed to be in charge, I don't know whether it's employment or whoever it is, has to be able to give directives that process has to be halted. You know, so I think, and then of course, given that this is a commercial transaction, you want Sharj to be able to do his job very quickly. But SNIT can also help us by giving us full disclosure as quickly as possible.
Doug, thank you very much. I still have with me Ernest Thompson. Mr. Thompson, a few questions to you, because you were there at the very top on the board too. You mentioned at the top of the hour when we're talking to you that you believe the board itself should step in now and stop it. But considering the board approved this, that looks highly unlikely. If you take Kojo Asante's point and Organized Labour's point too, that this transaction needs to be cancelled, who takes that decision?
I think it's very simple. I mean, the board of SNIT are trustees under the law, right? And as trustees, I think they can take a decision that, look, at this stage, let's end this thing.
But they won't, right?
And I'm saying so, Evans. I'm saying so because it's not like there's no alternate way of making these hotels profitable. You see, that is the issue. It is not only by selling and exiting. But and I'm saying this because I'll give you the history, the recent history. Let's take Labadi Beach Hotel. The strategy for Labadi Beach Hotel, under the Kwame Fefra board, the Joshua Labi board, was that NIT and even Special Space board. I mean, I think that might have been the board under the former governor, was that NIT will revamp this hotel with some money and then hand them over to international reputable hotel management companies, because SNIT as an investor has not got the expertise to manage these hotels. And that is where the problem is coming from. It's a management problem. Of course, COVID and the rest came in. So, insofar as Labadi Beach is concerned, which is HIG, what happened was very simple. And I was part of the team. A strong team went to South Africa after doing all the bids. Legacy won the bid. And Legacy is a highly reputed management company in the world. They run the Michelangelo in South Africa. They run the Raffles Suites. They run the Sun City and others even in Nigeria. So we went, we negotiated with them, signed agreements with them, the management agreements with them. In fact, they brought in Gary. If you ever been to Labadi Beach, that big fat chef who really helped to turn Labadi Beach around. And when Legacy took over for a fee, they managed to turn Labadi Beach around. And they paid the loan they gave them. Even declared dividends. Rather unfortunately, in 2017, just recently, or getting to 2017, when the current management came in, they decided not to renew the agreement, the management agreement. And that is where we are now. But Labadi has been turned around. And if Labadi has been turned around, why can't Lafam, Guzia, and Elimina? And I'll tell you, let me continue for just a second. When we realized that Legacy was doing a good job at Labadi Beach, we invited Legacy again to take over after another bid had been done. Big companies came in, Southern Sun, everything. Legacy won again. So a new agreement was signed with Legacy to run Lafam, Guzwa Beach, but have supervising control over Elimina, because Elimina had a peculiar problem because of the sea. Once again, what happened? 2017.
Well, where we stand, Mr. Thompson, the board reading the SNIT statement is bent on continuing the process, and your suggestion that they should step in to stop this doesn't look likely. There's a suggestion, obviously, and criticism also tonight, that the four reps of organized labor on the board didn't do enough. You know that board. Could they have done anything if indeed they objected to it?
Sorry, Evans, come again.
Could the four reps...
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.